Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, October 16th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Med school at U of I gets big bump. Donors $200,000 fully funded first class tuition from Urbana. The first class of students accepted to the Carl Illinois College of Medicine will get a big perk, about $200,000 worth of free tuition. The cutting-edge engineering-based medical school won approval last week from a national organization that accredits medical schools, which means it can start recruiting its first class of 32 students for the fall of 2018. They will each get full four-year scholarships funded by donors. The medical school has already raised enough to cover 15 of the 32 scholarships, according to its dean, Dr. King Lee. The scholarships are intended as a recruiting tool given that Illinois will be starting much later in the admission cycle than medical schools who have been taking applications since June. The goal is to increase our chances to get the best of the best, although the unique curriculum and technology focus should be highly attractive. We believe we will get thousands of applications. The preliminary accreditation from the Liaison Committee for Medical Education, after nearly a year-long review, is a major milestone in the college's development. This is probably the most important hurdle. It is a very rigorous process. Being given preliminary accreditation essentially is the stamp of approval that our infrastructure and our curriculum measures up to the most rigorous standards of medical education. The school won't get provisional accreditation until its first crop of students reaches the second year of medical school, and full accreditation comes when that inaugural class is in its final year. Because preliminary accreditation comes before students are admitted, the review team has to come back to look at the student experience and ultimately whether the school met the objectives it initially laid out. Lee knew of no case where accreditation has been removed, so the preliminary accreditation is a huge step. Lee and others are thrilled to finally be at this stage after years of planning. It's just so exciting. Now we are finally at the phase where we get to see student applications. It feels like it's happening, rather than waiting for things to happen. Dr. Matthew Gibb, Carl's chief medical officer, said doctors there are thrilled. There are smiles everywhere. Our physicians have been doing an incredible amount of work on the curriculum and putting the teaching structure together. Applications will be available on the college's website starting today. But before the medical school can accept students, the U of I must get approval to add the new college from the Higher Learning Commission, a regional accrediting body that evaluates the university as a whole, officials said. That visit is coming soon, and the LCME approval is a big plus. Officials hope the site visit team can submit its report before the commission's December meeting so it can be considered then. In the meantime, the medical school is launching a marketing push to recruit students and schedule open houses showcasing simulation labs and other technology for October 21st and November 18th. More than 600 students have already signed up to follow news from the website. Tuition will be in the low $50,000 range for out-of-state students and in the low to mid $40,000 range for Illinois residents. The medical school will give a discount on tuition for the first year. So under a 32 for 32 fundraising campaign, if a donor gives $32,000 for a year's tuition, the school will waive the remainder. A foundation is also providing 7% matching funds, so for every 14 scholarships we raise, we have another one. The school probably won't offer all students full scholarships in subsequent years, but it will continue a robust financial aid program, designating 30% of its tuition income for full or partial scholarships. Gibb, who attended medical school on a Navy scholarship, said free tuition should be a huge incentive this year. I probably wouldn't have been able to do it without that scholarship. The school wants to recruit candidates who have an analytic or quantitative background, and those folks are likely to be considering other very good medical schools. Having the scholarship may give them something to wait for rather than committing to somewhere else and locking them out of our application pool. Scholarships could also attract a more diverse class, as finances are a big deal for most applicants. The curriculum, designed around case studies and problem solving, will integrate engineering principles with medical education and clinical experience from day one. More traditional medical school models teach students in the classroom for 2 years, then provide clinical training. Graduates will be physician innovators who will use engineering and technology in their medical practices to improve the quality of health care, make it more accessible, and lower costs. Lee emphasized that the school will draw on disciplines from across campus, not just engineering, and use technology to make medicine more human, instilling in students compassion, competence, curiosity, and creativity. Every student will be required to develop innovative ideas in each of their clinical rotations. They will work with doctors and engineers to expand one of those ideas as a capstone project, which could be a starting point for a future business. Students will have access to entrepreneurial resources on campus to take their ideas to market. A medical maker lab will allow students to bring their innovations to life and test prototypes from the molecular level on up, overcoming a maker bottleneck faced by many researchers. Carle's access to patient data through its hospital clinics and insurance business will also provide a unique opportunity to use the U of I's engineering and big data capabilities for research to improve patient health. For example, a patient's medical record at a clinic doesn't always include outside therapy or treatments from other doctors, whereas insurance claims do, but large insurance companies are often reluctant to share that data. Getting the whole picture is important to understand patient outcomes. As we connect the dots with pieces of information, we can get a bigger and more robust picture of care. Also on the front page, Dreaming Big. Notable grads help launch campaign to raise $2.25 billion from Champaign. $2.25 billion, as in dollars. That's the target for the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign's newest and most ambitious fund drive, kicked off Friday night in a showcase of music, performance, and innovation at the State Farm Center. The campaign is almost halfway to its $2.25 billion goal, announced by Chancellor Robert Jones at the end of the program at the State Farm Center. It has raised $1 billion, including the $25 million lead gift from the Thomas and Stacy Seibel Foundation to establish the Seibel Center for Design. I know we'll achieve that goal, and together we will change the world. The With Illinois campaign has been in a quiet phase since 2014. Friday's event, which coincided with the U of I's Foundation's annual donor weekend, kicked off the public phase, which will run through 2022. The drive will raise money for students, faculty, research, and infrastructure. The U of I's last campaign, Brilliant Futures, raised $2.43 billion for all three U of I campuses before concluding in 2012. The Urbana campus goal was $1.5 billion and it eventually raised $1.7 billion. The new fund drive has separate goals for each campus. The U of I Springfield announced its goal of $40 million on last Tuesday. The U of I Chicago is scheduled to kick off its campaign and release its fundraising target on October 27th. Billed as one part TED Talk and one part Cirque du Soleil, Friday's event highlighted the U of I's achievements and impact through live performances, video, storytelling, and speakers. It spotlighted distinguished faculty, students, alumni, and major benefactors from physics professor and Nobel laureate Sir Anthony Liggett to undergraduate Viola Montez, who received scholarships to attend the U of I from her Chicago neighborhood of Pilsen and plans to work in public health. Montez, a first-generation college student, said she didn't expect to be able to go to Illinois and is grateful to be living my family's aspirations, propelled by those who believe accessibility to education should be for all. One life transformed may transform countless more, she said. Thank you for believing in opportunity and giving students like me the chance for an education so that we can give back. Liggett said he came to Illinois because it was a cutting-edge research in his field and where it has been done. He was attracted by the chance to collaborate with top researchers and was impressed by the collegial atmosphere. I am now proud to call Illinois home for myself and my family. Engineering graduate student Cy Kalayan, who received a fellowship to help finance his studies, said he expected to get a world-class education at the U of I. What I did not expect was the welcome. In the heart of Illinois are open fields, open minds, and boundless opportunities. Among the faculty highlighted was Ruby Mendenhall, professor of sociology and African American studies. She is partnering with Jean Robinson, director of the Carl R. Woese Institute for Genomic Biology, and mothers in Chicago's Inglewood neighborhood who have lost children to gun violence to examine the health impact on those left behind. A student once told me she didn't know research could look like this, emphasizing the U of I's responsibility to apply its research for the betterment of the community. Alumnus Adil Qatar appeared with graduate student and Army veteran Garrett Anderson, 29, to demonstrate the high-tech, affordable prosthetic limb Ektar developed to help millions of amputees around the world who can't afford prosthetics. Anderson, who works at the Chez Family Center for Wounded Veterans, was injured in Iraq and lost part of his arm. "It's sensitive enough for me to feel my daughter's hand." The two ended their presentation with a fist bump. The program also included dance groups, violinists, and DJs, as well as a cappella choir and the Marching Illini. An appearance by five Illinois members of the U.S. Paralympic team, who together won 16 gold medals, 11 silvers, and 14 bronze medals at the last three Paralympic Games, drew a standing ovation from the crowd. Also drawing applause were images of Roger Ebert, the first film critic to win a Pulitzer Prize, Professor Nick Holiak, inventor of the first visible light emanating diode, his mentor John Bardeen, who won two Nobels, and Tim Nugent, the pioneer of accessibility for those with disabilities. Among notable alumni giving testimonials was NASA astronaut Mike Hopkins, who talked about the opportunities provided by the university and the obligation of graduates to give back. With the right opportunities, there are no limits to what one can achieve or how far someone can go. I come from a small town in Missouri and ultimately ended up in outer space. Berica Baraka, a senior analyst at Applied Research Associates and a graduate of University High School, urged support for the high school to keep it accessible to all as a place where students are challenged intellectually and more. The presentations featured some high-profile fundraising targets, including the Carl Illinois College of Medicine and U of I Athletics. Carl Allegretti, managing partner of Deloitte's Chicago office, said his family has pledged to donate to the new Football Performance Center, and Deloitte has given $5 million to the College of Business Deloitte Center for Business Analytics. Deloitte hires many of its employees from the U of I. His wife and oldest son are U of I alumni, and his son Nick is a guard on the U of I football team. It's incumbent on us to remember that chance you were given and foster it for the next generation. Before the program, as pop music played, three giant screens set up above a stage bathed in orange and blue light showed scenes from campus life past and present. Students in research labs playing pool at the Illini Union, walking through the quad, cheering at football games, registering at the armory, moving into resident halls, or playing wheelchair basketball. Invited guests were seated in front, while hundreds of spectators filled in upper rows. "The breath of the good to come from Illinois is nothing short of remarkable," U of I President Tim Killeen told donors and others in the audience. "We have made the world is undeniable and indelible. You are what makes our university a place of singular creation and discovery." Jones said the university brings brilliant minds together to create innovation every single day, from curing diseases to relieving hunger to revolutionizing healthcare to reimagining education. "Tomorrow we will change the world with you, with Illinois." And from Urbana, developer plans to give new life to vacant sorority house. Professor's intention is to renovate it for use as apartments. A robust 1920s French Normandy house near campus town takes Pierre Moulin back to his European roots. Moulin, a Midwestern transplant and University of Illinois engineering professor, grew up in Belgium, about 10 miles from the north of France. As a child, he saw castles similar to the former Zeta Tau Alpha sorority house at 1404 South Lincoln Avenue. Moulin decided one day to check out the asking price for the property vacant since 2010. He owns several single-family rental homes around campus, but a property of this size was new to him. The price was pretty reasonable, and the inside was in troubled condition. I did a lot of homework, and when I concluded it was doable, I made an offer. Moulin is now on track to redevelop the house into an 18-unit apartment building called Chateau Norman. He received green lights last week from the city's Plan and Historic Preservation Commissions. If the city council does the same today, he can start construction. On the inside, Moulin wants to completely renovate and make studio 1, 2, and 3 bedroom apartments with a modern and comfortable aesthetic. He's allowed to make certain exterior renovations as well, thanks to the Historic Preservation Commission's approval. The windows will stay. They're from 1928. They'll basically be the only old part on the inside. The house is located near other properties, 1204 South Lincoln, 611 West Elm, and 802 South Lincoln, that received residential pushback over redevelopment proposals. Kevin Garcia, a planner with the city, said that wasn't the case this time. "We haven't heard any neighbor concerns about the project. I haven't received any negative calls or anything. There's been very little commentary." In addition, Garcia said the city held a public information meeting about the project on September 25th. Around 15 people attended, and he said the general feeling was positive. They seemed happy that some sort of reuse is being proposed. Moulin lives near the house and has been a Champaign-Urbana resident since 1996, so he's not new to the location or its residents. "It's a pretty unique area, and it's near campus, but still a very green area. It's one of the safest areas from crime in Urbana." Today's council vote will be on granting Moulin a planned unit development approval. If he gets it, the goal is to complete the construction and have the house ready to rent by August 1st. Trust Confidence. Two-term University of Illinois President Stan Eikenberry returned to Champaign-Urbana last week to take part in kickoff festivities for the U of I's new fundraising campaign. Eikenberry, who is now retired and living in State College, Pennsylvania, sat down for a chat with the News Gazette's Marcus Jackson. Question: what is your greatest achievement or accomplishment? At Illinois, it was creating a sense of trust and self-confidence, both within the faculty, administration, and board at the university, and state policymakers, including the governor and key members of the legislature. The world at the time, and probably today, continues to thrive on trust and mutual confidence. I think creating that climate of trust and confidence over more than a decade and a half was probably my greatest achievement. The buildings that occurred during that period were partly a function of that trust. The Beckman Institute came to Illinois, and at the time, the $50 million gift from Arnold Beckman was the largest gift to ever come to a public university in the United States. I think Arnold Beckman trusted not only me, but people like Ted Brown and Mort Weir, both of whom worked with faculty and developed a solid, competitive proposal that he wanted to see. Are you doing anything professionally these days? I still dabble a little bit, but not nearly as active as I was 10, 20 years ago. I'm still affiliated with the National Institute of Learning Outcome Assessment. It's based at Urbana-Champaign, and its purpose is to help colleges and universities across the country understand better what students actually know and are able to do as a result of their college education. How much do you pay attention to the things going on here in the top administration? I try to stay out of the way. Certainly, I'm wishing everyone Well, it was certainly a challenging and rewarding job when I was there, and I think it's even more so today. You can only have one set of hands on the tiller at a time, so I try to stay out of day-to-day affairs. When you retired in 1995, you said you'd be remembered as a concrete pourer and a ribbon cutter. Is that your legacy? Yes, I cut a lot of ribbons and poured a lot of concrete, and I'm proud of that. I always thought at the time that other things were equally, if not more important, but concrete sticks around for a long time, so you need to get it right. Do you have any hobbies? I like to swim. I enjoy riding the bicycle. I enjoy walking. Curiously enough, I'm not a golfer. That's an occupational hazard for a university president because a lot of university business can get done on the golf course. Otherwise, I enjoy the outdoors. My wife Judy and I also enjoy traveling. Tell me something people don't know about you. My whirlwind romance with the University of Illinois was only about 30 days between the time I first received a call with the expression of interest on their part and my appointment as president back in 1979. But by today's standards, that's whirlwind. Usually that courtship takes months, and in that instance, it took less than 1 month. I learned to know the university very well in a short period of time. My wife and I flew in to see the university for the first time. I had never set foot on the Urbana campus. We flew to Indianapolis and were met by Jack Corbally, who was the president at that time. He drove us over, and driving through this flat land, I had never seen that part of the country. I was amazed by what I was seeing. A lot of corn, and there was another plant out there, and I had no idea what soybeans looked like. Jack explained I'd learned to love them. That courtship was very quick, but turned out to be a long and satisfying marriage with a place we continued to love. Where are you dying to visit? We just came back a month or so ago from a trip to Newfoundland. We met and knew some friends who come from Canada and one couple from there. Somehow we got intrigued with going to Newfoundland and spent 2 weeks traveling around the fishing villages. It's a beautiful part of the world. Scotland's lovely and Italy is fantastic. A lot of great places to visit on the face of the globe. What is a personality trait you hate in other people and yourself? I don't like pessimism. I think it's much easier to live and work and achieve things in life if you approach life basically as an optimist. There's plenty of disappointment in life and many bumps along the way. I think getting up every day with a positive, optimistic attitude is certainly a great gift and a great blessing. I think the antithesis of that is folks who find it difficult to believe that things really will come up on top and great things are achievable. There is a fine line between optimism and a lack of reality, but I think erring on the side of optimism is something that has served me well over a period of years. Those who know me well, and Judy will confirm, I tend to be a micromanager when I should leave those details to someone. Managing the details can shape the overall strategy. I sometimes get more involved in working with trying to control minor details. If you do that to excess, you can lose sight of the longer-term, more important strategic goals. What was your first job? I carried a newspaper, the Washington Post, in our little town in West Virginia. Subsequent to that, I worked on a turkey farm. I recall that I made $25 a week. At that time, that was pretty good money. And finally, how do you handle stress? There are a variety of ways to handle stress. When I was in Illinois, I did it partly by listening to classical music. I had a set of earphones, and I would go downstairs and put on my earphones and listen to classical music in the middle of the night if I was feeling stressed. The other great memory was to get outside and get some exercise, take a long walk, breathe some fresh air. Things are never as challenging and as stressful as they sometimes seem. Letter to the editor. Trump moving nation backward on energy. I read and saw a couple of disturbing stories in the news this weekend. Time magazine and CBS News reported on efforts by China to take the lead in lithium batteries and solar energy development. At the same time that government is looking forward on clean and renewable energy, the Trump administration seems fixated on moving us back to the 19th and 20th centuries by focusing on saving coal. In fact, President Donald Trump is looking to cut spending on renewable energy, while China is doing it all it can do to support those technologies. Never thought I would see the day that America was looking backward, and China would be the more progressive and forward-looking country. President Trump needs to stop worrying about saving jobs and coal and focus on developing and supporting the hundreds of thousands of jobs in the renewable energy field. The president touts capitalism. Well, it's time he listens to the marketplace, and it has sent a clear message on the future of coal. Congressman Rodney Davis, where do you stand on the Trump's administration's misguided attempt to save a 19th century energy source while slashing funding for renewable energy? Scott Davis, Champaign. NRA stays silent following tragedies. The National Rifle Association just lurks in the background every time a horrific shooting tragedy occurs. Its officials admonish that this is not the time for discussion. They count on the public's short attention span. They wait while we argue about bump stocks. Because their products are durable and rarely become obsolete, they must compel consumers to buy more. While the majority of the U.S. population who never owned guns and have no use for them shake their heads while they think and pray, a relatively small group of fearful consumers and deluded insurrectionists, enabled by the NRA's preposterous explanations of the poorly phrased Second Amendment's original intent, continue arming themselves. Meanwhile, the NRA-backed merchants of death continue the lobbying, the bribery, and the propaganda that corrupt our understanding of history and the law. Every new gun brings more freedom and more safety. Some of the profits are invested in our politicians, like Representative Rodney Davis, whose votes have been secured for a mere $14,000. Thoughts and prayers are free. The sad truth is that it's going to be nearly impossible for us to extricate ourselves from this tragedy, more than 12,000 gun deaths per year, until we implement former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens' advice and improve the Second Amendment by the 21st century by adding just five words, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms when serving in the militia shall not be infringed. Hector Mandel, Rural Philo. And from Brownsville, Texas, man stole $1 million worth of fajitas. A former South Texas Juvenile Justice Department employee has been arrested for felony theft after authorities say he acknowledged stealing $1 million worth of fajitas over 9 years. Investigators subsequently checked vendor invoices and determined he would intercept county-funded food deliveries and deliver them to his own customers. The scheme imploded when he missed work one day in August for a medical appointment, and a delivery driver showed up with 800 pounds of fajitas. But officials said the juvenile department didn't serve fajitas. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for October 16th. Please stay tuned.